This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime. We'll begin this week with the adventures of Philip Marlowe and Rushton Hickory, his episode from September 10th, 1949. After that, it's Stand By for Crime and The Black Hand, their story that aired sometime in 1953.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. The lady tourist was a school teacher out after glamour, and she got it. But only after she learned that in Hollywood the three R's could be reading, done in a dark room, writing found in a dead man's pocket in arithmetic, that added up to murder times two.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's transcribed story, The Rushton Hickory.
It was hot in my apartment, even at 10 o'clock at night. The sultry wind blowing through curtains at the far side of the room didn't help a bit. It was the kind of night that made me wish I was something else. A butcher, baker, candlestick maker, anything. After a long, hot day spent in the downtown courts of law, listening to the petty arguments of a petty larceny case, I was tired of petty people. The paper I had picked up on my way home wasn't helping any. 10 killed in an air crash. Mental cruelty, says local songbird. I made myself another highball. Lots of ice, easy with water. And picked up the paper again. It was still more of the same. Cy Nestor killed in office on Sunset Strip. Cy Nestor. He'd hit the papers before. Bookie, B-minus picture producer, general racketeer. Somehow I wasn't too surprised he was on the receiving end for a change. My drink was good for 10 more pages of equally dull reading, and I was set for the next in line when the phone rang.
Mr. Philip Marlowe?
It was the first attractive voice I'd heard all day.
Mr. Marlowe?
And you know, I thought she might be fun.
My name is Joan Rushton, and I'm only here in Hollywood from Ferndale, Nebraska on a vacation, and I wanted to have some fun. You know, see the nightclubs and the stars and that sort of thing.
Wait a minute,
Joan. I didn't want trouble, Mr. Marlowe.
Hold it.
I reached a woman.
Teacher. Hey.
Yes?
Let's back up a little, huh? Now, your name is Joan Rushton. You're from Ferndale, Nebraska, which you're right, I've never heard of. Also, you're a school teacher. That much I got. But the rest about the sights, the last part, the trouble.
Oh, but don't you see? They're the one and the same.
Oh?
I wanted to step out. Nightclubs, movie stars, glamour. But it didn't end up like that because he was shot, and then I didn't know what to do. And his name's Aubrey Nickel. He's the man who took me out to show me the club. Anyhow, after it happened, I ran.
Why?
Why? The publicity, of course. Mr. Marlowe, I'd lose my job. You see, I'm a school teacher.
Yeah, you said that, honey. Now, look, where are you, Joan?
The Tulip Room. It's a bar on Sunset and La Cienega Boulevard. You'll come right over, huh? Huh?
Yeah, I'll come right over, huh? Goodbye, Joan.
Hey, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, but where are you?
Over here in this booth. Hurry.
Okay, hurry it is. Hello. Now tell me why all the secrecy and you... Oh.
And what? What are you staring at?
You. I expected braids, Joan. Horn rims, calico, maybe. Not ice blue satin, drape plunging, and,
Yes?
Yes. Start at the top, honey, and slow this time, huh?
Well, yesterday I met this man, this Aubrey Nickel I mentioned. Oh, he's really nice, Mr. Marlowe. He's a photographer, has a darling place up on the Sunset,
Sunset Strip. You want there to have your picture taken?
Uh-huh. I wanted something, well, something glamorous.
That's easy.
Look, here what I got. Oh, by the way, I ordered a drink for you. A scotch drink. Here. You like scotch drinks, don't you?
Yeah, I, Scotch drinks are my favorite drinks, Joan, thanks.
You're welcome. Now, isn't it wonderful? The picture, I mean.
I'll say it is. I'd never say school teacher.
No, that's the idea. Just like a model in a fashion magazine, isn't it? Aubrey took it from inside his photo shop while I was outside on the street looking in his window. You know, like a smart career girl just strolling along the avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And see how he faded out the background? That way I'm the focal center.
Focal center.
Isn't it nice?
Oh, yes, it is, yeah. But look, Joan, the rest of the story. Now, the man was shot. You don't want publicity, remember?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Well, we made a date, Mr. Marlowe, for tonight. I was to be at his place, his shop on the strip at 8, which I was. But when I got there...
He was gone.
Well, no. He might just as well have been for all the attention he paid to me.
Huh?
He had something on his mind. Acted as though he didn't even expect me. Why, I had to mention his picture here twice before he got it out of the drawer for me. But then, just like that, he changed. Said if I wanted glamour and nightclub, why not?
Oh, by all means, why not?
And off we went to Cyrano's, no less, and sat at a table with two men and a woman who was actually Irmgard Fury.
Actually who?
Irmgard Fury, the starlet.
Oh.
Don't you read the papers? Oh, golly, her picture's been in every theater section and magazine for the last 6 months. Of course, she hasn't made a movie yet, but she probably will.
Wait a minute. Irmgard Fury, she has red hair, a figure, lots of each, huh?
Oh, that's right. Mm. Oh, and so sweet to talk to. Well, believe it or not, when we were in the powder room and she couldn't find her lipstick, she used mine.
Now, that's really democratic. Look, Joan, there was a shooting. You remember that. Now, you were sitting at a table with three men in this Irmgard Fury?
That's right.
Well, go on. What happened next?
Well, when Miss Fury and I got back to the table, Mr. Lacey and his friend were gone. And then a minute later, Aubrey excused himself to make a phone call.
And then?
And then a waiter brought me a note from Aubrey which said I should go back to my hotel and wait there till I heard from him. Then it happened.
Hmm. Look, Joan, if I'm going to help you on this, you got to tell the whole coherent story.
Well, suddenly there were some shots, maybe from outside, and people were yelling. It was terrible. I was scared to death, and I ran outside. People were crowded around someone. It was Aubrey. He was dead.
What'd you do then?
I took the first taxi I could get to my hotel, the Beverly Crest. I started from my bungalow, but didn't go inside because there was a man hanging around. I'd seen him before someplace, and I didn't like his looks and turned away, and he called to me. Oh, he was awful, Mr. Marlowe.
Awful looking like a frog, maybe? Sloping shoulders, bulging eyes?
Yes, and when... Mr. Marlowe, how do you know what he looked like?
Promise not to tell.
Promise not to... Oh, Mr. Marlowe, he's here, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Been watching us for quite a while.
Oh, holy smokes, and I didn't get away from him. Oh, Mr. Marlowe, I had nothing to do with this shooting. What can I do? I simply can't be mixed up in this terrible business. Oh, please, Mr. Marlowe, I'll pay you anything. Only get me out of this, please.
We'll talk about that later, Joni. Now, look, when we get up, keep talking and don't look away from me. Then when we're outside and around the taxi stand there, duck away from me fast and get in close to the building and stay there till the frogman is gone. And head for your hotel bungalow and wait till you hear from me. Now, you got that?
Well, yes, but I don't understand why he's going to leave us.
You will, if our little coup works. Come on. It played easier than I'd expected, because like a good shadow, the frogman gave us a small head start, which was all I needed. The second Joan darted away from me, I moved quickly up to the first cab in line, opened and slammed the rear door fast, said goodbye out loud to Joan, who was not in the back seat, then slipped the driver five, winked hard, and practically shouted a very faraway address at him. When he lurched in the curb, I stood there and waved a minute. It was what still supposed to be Joan. Then, even as I saw the frogman dart across the street, pile into his own car and take off after the cab, I walked slowly back into the bar where I had another scotch drink and did some fast checking on the current location of Aubrey Nichols, which was the Dawson Memorial Hospital. Then I started outside for my car after stopping en route at the booth where Joan and I had been sitting to pick up a pair of gloves and glamour portrait my new little client had left on the seat. The schoolmarm had been upset indeed.
Dawson Memorial Hospital, Dr. Chambers?
Yes, one moment, please. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Oh, I want to know the condition of a patient who was brought in here a little while ago, Mr. Aubrey Nichols.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. We're not allowed to give out such information. You'll have to inquire at the superintendent's office. Sir, Joe,
I wouldn't bother, Phil.
Well, Detective Lieutenant Matthews, good evening.
Good evening. Nichols is dead, Marlowe. We did not get a statement from him.
That's too bad. Any idea who did it?
No. Have you?
Uh-uh. I didn't even know him. A client of mine.
Yeah, Mr. Smith.
That's right. That's remarkable. Mr. Smith, he asked me to inquire about his condition.
Uh-huh. Well, it happened about an hour ago in an alley behind Cyrano's. Aubrey Nichols was a photographer up on the strip, but pretty much of a phony. A big front boy, strictly.
That's all there was to it, huh?
Walk down here with me a little.
Oh, sure.
We figure there may be some connection between this shooting and Cy Nestor's death this afternoon. Nestor also had an office on the strip.
What do you figure the tie-in is, Matthew?
A man named Ham Lacey. You ever hear of him?
Yeah, he was one of Nesta's number one boys in the racket, right?
Yeah, something like that. Mm. Of course, officially, Ham Lacey is known as the vice president of Nesta Enterprises Incorporated. Also production manager of that second-rate movie studio Nesta owns.
Mm.
Well, anyway, Lacey, another man, and Aubrey Nickel were at Cyrano's tonight with a starlet named Ermgard Fury. And another gal we haven't been able to tag yet. Now, tell me...
Wait a minute, Lieutenant. When Nesta was killed, did it look like the usual mob tactics?
No, no. Nesta was beat up by fists. Not sapped, not cut up with brass knuckles. Her death was caused by a blow to the temple from a poker that was standing next to a phony fireplace in which he could have hit his head when he fell.
Well, probably not Lacey and Associates, huh?
Probably not. He's got an alibi.
Yeah?
Besides, we already got a fair line on who did it and why. We found a note in Nesta's pocket signed D. Tobin, which threatened Nesta with a beating if he didn't stay away from the undersigned's wife and send her back home at once. Nesta, you may or may not happen to know, had this Imgard Fury or something under contract to him, saw lots of her. So, again, the two deaths more or less tie together.
Yeah, you've already talked to... by the way, her name is Imgard Fury.
No, I ain't talked. I figured I'd wait till I knew a little more. Also, I didn't figure Nickel would die without saying anything.
No.
Well, now it's your turn. We found this negative in the alley near Nickel's body. This is a night shot of the Sunset Strip and nothing more. Means anything to you?
No, why should it? Now, look, I told you before, Lieutenant, I never even met Nickel.
Yeah, and I listened, didn't I?
I noticed.
Yeah, but now let's level a bit, huh, Phil? Who your client is and what he or she has to do with this is one thing as long as we're both on the same side. But playing dumb when it might count is quite another. Now, once more, Phil, huh? The picture?
Still zero, Lieutenant. Honor bright. Anything else?
Yeah, just to save you a little time, Phil.
Yeah, let's do.
Ermgard Fury's address, 441 West Bedford Drive, Beverly Hills. Got a
441 pencil? West Bedford Drive.
Now, play it close. Be sure to call when you think it's time. And if you're wondering about why all this help from me, try this. What you know and won't tell, plus what I know and will tell, might do the trick. Say goodbye to me, Phil.
Goodbye.
Yes?
Miss Fury, my name's Philip Marlowe. I must talk to you at once.
About what?
Your husband. I'm a friend of his, and he asked me to get in touch with you. It's because of what happened this afternoon up on the Strip.
Oh? Well, what's wrong is... Is Dave here in town?
Yeah, he is, and he's in trouble. You see, the police are after him.
All right, hold it, mister. You've said enough.
Huh?
What are you, cop or reporter?
Oh, now, wait a minute, Miss Fury. I've already told you I'm a friend of Dave.
Whose name happens to be Douglas. Mr. Douglas Tobin. Keep that in mind when you try this next time. Good night.
Not so fast, baby. The mistake was mine, but I still want to talk to you.
So do a lot of men.
I'll bet.
Now, beat it before...
Thank God.
Before I forget myself.
What's the trouble, Aunt Guy?
Oh, no trouble, Hamilton, darling. This gentleman was just leaving. He had the wrong address. He made a mistake, didn't you, Mr. Marlowe?
Yes, a blunder. 1,000 apologies and good night, Mrs. Tobin. What it was worth, it worked. At the mention of the name Tobin, Ham Lacey spun around like he was built on a pivot, and his eyes that were narrow slits with all the come-hither look of a cobra has never left me. As I slowly walked away from him and past the yellow convertible he'd just driven up in. License number 6969X, California. And on out to the street. All of which only meant that Lieutenant Matthews was probably right about there being some connection between Cy Nesta's murder and the death of Aubrey Nickel. When I opened the door of my car and started to climb in under the wheel, the voice in the night helped not at all.
If you don't do as I say, I'll kill you.
Okay.
Knock it out.
Take it easy.
All right. Now close the door and turn around. You're back to me.
Now look, if this is a stick-up, Busty, you can save us both a lot of time.
Shut up. I'm not a hold-up man. Now move over there, close to those trees. Go on. I want to ask you a question. All right, that's far enough. Now, what have you got to do with Helen?
Helen who?
Helen took... Ermgard Fury, that's what she's known as now. What have you got to do with her? Tell me.
Very little, Mr. Tobin.
Tobin? Do you know who I am?
And so do the police. Why don't you call it quits while you're still in one piece?
No, not quits. That's what you want, what all of you want. Me arrested and out of the way in jail and maybe out of the way for good. No. But that won't be. Helen's mine and you're not going to harm her.
Careful, Tobin, you're getting excited.
Yes, excited enough for this. Oh!
In just a moment the second act of Philip Marlowe, but first, a thrill a minute, high-tension suspense from the word go, dramatic excitement that builds and builds until it explodes in a smashing climax. That's Inner Sanctum, the great mystery show that's another of CBS's top-notch Monday night programs. You'll find Inner Sanctum one of the most entertaining spots in your Monday night listening schedule. And remember, Lux Radio Theater is back for its 15th year of great dramatic presentations. Inner Sanctum and Lux Radio Theater every Monday night over most of the same CBS stations. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Rust in Hickory.
When the whirling pinwheels of light slowed down to being street lamps again, Douglas Tobin had pounded shoe leather on enough sidewalk to be safely out of sight. But it took a full minute of rubbing the bruise where his pistol had glanced off my head before I finally remembered that it was a good time to call Joan. I looked back at Irmgard Fury's house first and saw the light still on, the cream-colored convertible still parked in front and all apparently quiet inside. So I limped as far as the phone booth on the corner. I warned my client that the trick we pulled on the frog wouldn't hold up forever. But instead, I found out just how far this side of forever it had collapsed.
Yeah, hello.
Hello. Hey, what number is this?
Well, Shamus, you got the right number, Shamus.
What are you doing there? Where's Joan Rustin?
Oh, the babe's here, but she ain't in much of a mood to talk. Incidentally, thanks for giving me this free time, Dibby.
What are you talking about?
That fast shuffle you tossed me, Dibby. That now you see her, now you don't gag with the taxi. An old shell game operator like me, that one was as tough to see through as a glass bottom boat.
All right. You get your diploma in the morning, but listen, you, if anything happens to Miss Rustin, I'll break
it. Skip it, Dippy. You're wasting your breath. It's already happened. I'll see you around. So long.
Oh. Joan. Joan, come on, baby. Come on. Snap out of it.
Oh, stay away from me.
Hey.
Get out of here, you.
Hey, hold it. It's me, Joni, Marlowe.
Marlowe?
Yeah.
Oh, Marlowe.
Come on, honey. What happened? Are you hurt, Joan?
That man, the one with the gruff voice.
Yeah?
He forced his way in here, Marlowe. He was looking for something. I tried to stop him. I was going to scream, but I guess that's when he put the bite on me.
That slug, baby.
Well, anyway, he hit me hard. And I've never been treated that way before in my whole life.
You've never been buddies with murder before, either. Come on, honey. Get up off the floor, huh? Easy now. Yeah. Hey, he turned your place inside out, too, didn't he? What was he after, Joni?
Oh, I don't know. He just told me to quit stalling and hand it over. I didn't know what he meant, so he shoved me. Then he pulled out all the books there and tore up the rugs.
He was looking for something small and flat like a... Wait a minute. Sure. The cops found a negative near Aubrey Nickel tonight, but it was worthless. There must have been another one, an important one. And Lacey and Froggy, who no doubt is Helm Bay, must think you've got it.
Me? Well, that's impossible. All I had was my picture, and, well, I don't even have that now.
No, but I do, out in my car, and it gives me a great idea. Come on.
Well, where, Marlowe? I don't get it. What's my photograph got to do with this?
Maybe plenty. You see, when Aubrey printed that picture of you, he faded out the background almost completely. You remember?
Uh-huh.
That's a stunt in fashion photography to make a subject stand out. But in this case, Joan, I figure it was played strictly in reverse.
Well, how do you mean?
That Aubrey took you to Cyrano's tonight on business, big business. And you were holding the merchandise for him all the way.
Oh.
Here. Let's take a look.
Oh, Marlowe, my pretty picture frame.
Better this than your pretty head later, sweetheart, believe me. Uh-huh, yeah, here it is. Look, see? A negative the size of a postage stamp. But I'll bet old flashbulbs the $10 bills this baby's really loaded.
Marlowe,
hmm?
I'll bet that baby's loaded, too.
What are you talking about?
The gun in that man's hand there behind you.
Oh, fine.
Wait. Easy, Marlowe. I'm not looking for any more trouble. I just want to be sure that you'll help me first. You're a private detective. I searched you before, so I know. I'm in a jam. It's worse than I figured. The cops are after me. For murder.
No kidding. I can't understand it, Tobin. All you got is a motive deep enough to swim in, and you've been dropping clues like Hansel and Gretel dropped pebbles.
All right, but I didn't do it. Well, I beat up Cy Nestor, sure, but... Well, he was going with Helen. My Helen. I hated everything and everybody in this phony town because they took her away from me. Even changed her name for her. Irmgard Fury. But I didn't kill Nestor. I swear I didn't. You've got to help me, Marlowe.
With that 38 in your fist, are you asking or telling?
Oh, I'm asking, brother. Here, take it. Take the gun. I'm in a fix and I know it.
Okay, hothead. I'm already in Dutch for hiding Matthew's key witness here. Think how I'll look keeping his chief suspect under wraps, too. Yet, oh, maybe I'm a sucker, but I believe you. All right, where do you hang your hat?
The Country Cottage is number 7. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a motel court down on Melrose Street.
Number 7. Now go there and stay out of sight. And I mean stay out of sight.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thanks, Marlowe. Say, I'm sorry I batted you down tonight.
That makes a lot of difference to the lump on my head. Go on, Tobin, beat it.
Okay.
I'll keep in touch with you.
Where are we going, Marlowe?
Call a friend of mine. We need a big enlargement of a small negative. Hiya, Shermie. This is Phil Marlowe.
No kidding. Gee, how's business, Phil? Long time no see.
Yeah, I know. Now, look, are you busy? I got a job that's right down your alley, Sherman. It's important.
What is it, Marlowe?
Well, it's a 35-millimeter negative. I want it blown up to about half as big as a house.
Okay, bring it in.
I can't. I've got to check a couple of other things at the same time. Now, look, Shermie, can you meet me at the Aubrey Nichols studio on the strip in about 10 minutes, back door?
Wait a minute. Back door?
Yeah.
Phil.
So we can kick it in without attracting too much attention. Shermie, I'll see you in 10 minutes. I piled Joan into the car, drove down the strip, and once past Nichols' studio, which was enough. Joan had posed for a picture in front of the place, and directly across the street, behind her, just as I knew it had to be, was a neat plastic sign reading Sign Nestor Enterprises on the diminutive but glossy imitation Swiss chalet where Nestor's body had been found. We turned double back through the alley and found Sherman bobbing up and down like a nervous gopher. 5 minutes of not-so-subtle persuasion got us past the lock and inside Aubrey's studio where something else checked. The walls were practically papered with pictures of Irmgard Fury, taken from every conceivable angle, including some that were not. Things were beginning to make a lot of sense.
Marlowe, is this all right? Coming in here, I mean, sort of uninvited and all.
Breaking and entering, lady. You can get 5 years for it. I sure hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah, this must be the dark room. Yeah. Now, here's the negative, Shermie. Do your stuff.
What do you really expect to find on the film, Marlowe?
A murderer, baby. It's got to go one of two ways. Douglas Tobin for jealousy or Ham Lacey for ambition. Aubrey Nichols caught one of the two in the background when he took your picture. And he was familiar enough with all parties concerned over there to think he could put the screws on somebody. How's it coming, Shermie?
He could get out in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
15x20, okay?
Yeah, it's good. If there isn't a man in the background, I'll eat it.
Better get the salt and pepper, pal, because it's nothing but a car. See?
It can't be. Oh, brother, that's more than a car, Shermie. It's a yellow convertible that belongs to Ham Lacey. Look, you can even see the license, 6969X.
696? Oh, now how do you suppose...
What's the matter, Marlowe?
I just thought of something. Without this picture, both Tobin and Lacey are suspects. But with it, we have proof Lacey is implicated. That means Lacey thinks he has Tobin sitting in the perfect frame, right where he wants him.
Oh, Marlowe, listen.
Now, look, you two get out of here. Go back to the paper. I've got to get to Tobin fast and let him know.
Oh, Phil, listen,
look, baby, you're no doubt terrific in the third grade. But some things they don't even teach in college are going to pop any minute, so I'll take it from here, huh? Stick with Shermie, honey. I'll call you.
Oh, but Marlowe, wait.
I made it from the strip down to Melrose and then east to the cluster of dusty lean-tos with baths known as country cottages in something under 10 minutes. Parked down the street and cut back through the alley on foot. I got to the door of cottage number 7 with about 30 seconds to spare.
Now, wait a minute, mister. You got me wrong.
Oh, no, I haven't, pal. You can tell me you didn't knock off Sinestra and I'll believe you. What? Nobody else will. I've got you right where I want you.
Now, wait a minute.
Because of your note found in Nestor's pocket. You're the jilted boyfriend. The hick from back home. Who came to Hollywood with murder in your heart and knocked off the guy who stole your wife.
Now, look.
Yeah,
you're...
and then you went after the cheap photographer who gave her start.
Oh, yeah.
And after that, you knew you couldn't escape, so you blew your brains out.
Yeah,
and by the time I leave here, that's the way it's going to look.
Not tonight, Ham.
Yeah,
stand still, Lacey. Toss the gun over on the bed. Go on. That's better. So you figured Aubrey was lying about having a picture that pegged you as Sinestra's killer, didn't you? You figured Aubrey saw something but had no proof, so you shot him. But you were wrong, Ham. He had all the proof we need.
Oh, Marlowe,
look out! Joan, who's out there?
Oh, Phil!
Joan!
Phil.
Joan, are you all right?
Mary, I hit her. She's the one who killed Sinestra. I tried to tell you that. I followed you here to tell you, but instead I saw her with a gun pointed at you. I grabbed the first thing I saw, this broken rake handle, and I hit her with it. I hit her awfully hard, Phil. She... But she isn't moving. You don't think she's...
dead? No. She's probably thinking over the big lesson you just taught her with that stick there.
Why? Well, what's the matter?
Hey, Teach. You know what that rake handle's made of?
Why, it's hickory, isn't it?
Yeah. What else could it possibly be but a hickory stick?
All right, Marlowe, all right. Nobody can hear us. Now, what is it?
Well, it's that Miss Rustin here is a schoolteacher, Matthews, and it's imperative that we keep her name out of this.
Oh, well, we can arrange that.
Oh, good. You know, Matthews, it's funny how one step leads to another.
Yeah?
Ham Lacey never would have gone so far as to kill Nestor on his own. But when he learned that Ermgard had done it, he saw an opportunity to turn the whole situation to his advantage. He and the girl agreed to frame Tobin and then go along as a team.
You know, of course, that that's just your theory.
Just a minute.
Now,
what do you mean?
Sit down over there and be quiet for a change while Miss Rustin and I wind this up.
Matthews, listen.
Now, quiet, please.
Pulling rank, huh?
Phil. Now, Miss Rustin. In solving this case,
just a minute, she didn't solve the case. I...
Miss Rustin, if you hadn't solved it, and right when you did, you'd be talking to this guy exclusively via Ouija board from now on, let's face it.
Oh, what a corny pitch.
Now tell me, Miss Rustin, how did you peg Ermgard Fury?
Well, when we got the picture of the yellow convertible, I remembered that I'd gone to the powder room at Cyrano's with Miss Fury to freshen our makeup. But she couldn't find her lipstick. She emptied her purse looking for it, and she finally had to borrow mine, you know.
Oh, how democratic.
I said that.
So now you own it? Now tell me, Miss Rustin, how do you figure the lipstick figures?
Oh, it wasn't a lipstick. I happened to notice among the things from a purse a keychain, a chain with car keys on it, and an identification tag in the form of a little license plate.
Oh, and the numbers were...
6969X.
That's right.
And since Ham Lacey had an alibi and those keys were in Miss Fury's bag, you figured it was her who'd been driving.
It was she who'd been driving, yes.
Isn't this revolting?
Yeah, she, yes. Yeah. She wanted to kill Nestor because he wouldn't turn loose of her so she could claw her way on up to the bitter top. And when she found him unconscious, it was easy.
How literary.
Well, that's that, I guess. Thank you very much, Miss Rustin. I hope your stay in our town has been... Well, oh, what's the matter?
Tony, baby, don't cry.
I just thought of the most dreadful thing. I've had a wonderful time. I went to Cyrano's. I hit a movie star on the head and I helped solve a murder. But I'll never, ever be able to say one single word about it to anybody in Ferndale, Nebraska. Darn it all.
It took a few minutes to put on a new touch of mascara and get the pink off her nose, but she was smiling again when we said goodnight to Matthews and stood on the steps at headquarters and looked at the glittering lights of Hollywood. There was still plenty of time for supper and even a dance or two, and she wanted to go. But suddenly, from somewhere, there was a smell of autumn in the air, of dry leaves on the ground and ripe red apples for the teacher. She shook her head wistfully and spoke of an appointment she had bright and early next Monday morning.
It's a very important appointment, Phil.
So, I took her to a hotel and said goodbye. All the way home, for some reason, I kept wondering, whatever happened to Skinny McDonald? The only kid in school who could shoot a better spitball than Marlowe. Has it really been that long ago?
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe star Gerald Moore and are transcribed and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
There was a tapestry found under a tomb. They were all after it. The worried importer, the man with half a face, the Englishman in an L.A. slum... and the lady wearing a green veil. But before it was over, none of them had it, and two of the four were dead.
Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Stand by for crime.
Hi, Chuck Morgan, KOP newscaster speaking. The other day, while shooting a round of golf with my friend Lieutenant Bill Meggs of police headquarters, I learned something that surprised me, and I'm sure will surprise you as well. That is that the Mafia, or Black Hand, is still actively operating in this and other countries. You know, the Mafia originated in Sicily several hundred years ago. It was originally designed to protect the common people against the tyranny of landowners and royalty. But today, members of the Mafia are a bunch of gangsters, thugs, murderers, and lesser criminals who use it to further their own ends. The most effective weapon they have is fear, instilling fear in the hearts of their victims. Well, the story I'd like to tell you about tonight is a good example of how the Mafia works. Carol Curtis, my blonde secretary, and I were having dinner at Nick Adele's following my 7 o'clock broadcast, and we're wondering what kind of a feature yarn I could use on the 11 o'clock show.
How about those two jokers who think they're going to race their hot rods up Mount Wilson? Maybe you could build that into something. They're both war veterans and... Chuck?
Hmm? Oh, what were you saying, Glamourpuss?
What was I saying, Glamourpuss? For heaven's sakes, why can't you pay attention when I beat my brains out trying to... What in the world are you staring at?
That man talking to Nick. I think he wants to see me. Yeah, yeah. Nick just pointed this way and he's coming over.
He looks scared to death. Do you know him?
No, total stranger. There's something wrong with him, that's for sure.
You Mr. Chuck Morgan?
Yeah, that's right. I'm Morgan.
Can I talk to you a minute?
Sure, sure. Sit down.
Alone.
Oh, pardon me.
Sit still, Glamourpuss. This is my secretary, Carol Curtis. She's harmless.
Thanks, pal.
I'm sorry, Miss Curtis. I didn't mean to be rude.
Sit down, sit down. Tell us what's on your mind.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. My name's Frank Dawson. You've never heard of me. I'm just an ordinary person, clothing store clerk.
What's on your mind, Frank?
Well, it's taken me a long time to work up enough courage to tell somebody this. You see, I'm a very frightened man.
Oh, that's easy to see.
Is it as obvious as that? I try to cover it up, but it's no use.
You sound like a man whose conscience has been bothering you, and you can't take it any longer.
Yes. Yes, that's it exactly. You see, 4 nights ago, I witnessed a murder. I saw Elmer Hatfield shot to death.
Elmer Hatfield? Well, he's the councilman who was murdered for cracking down on rackets around town.
Yeah, and the police have been in a sweat trying to find out who did it. Did you recognize the man who fired the shots, Frank?
No, but I recognized the man who was driving the getaway car.
Uh-huh. Who was that?
Jack Stone.
Now we've got a real fine situation. Jack Stone, head of the gambling syndicate, huh? Well, he's a logical suspect for the killer of the man who was trying to undermine his gravy train.
You must have a good reason for not going to the police with this information.
Yes, I have a good reason, Miss Curtis, a very good reason. And it's here on this card.
Dawson reached into his pocket, took out a small white card, and laid it face up on the table. There was nothing on the card, except for the imprint of a black hand. If hadn't told me that story about the Mafia or Black Hand, I would have thought this was some corny routine being played by a practical joker. But Bill had told me the story, and had showed me facts and figures. And here was this Frank Dawson looking dead serious and scared to death. And there was that white square of card with the imprint of the Black Hand on it lying between us on the table.
Well, that's nothing but a picture of Black Hand. Does it mean something?
It means plenty, Glamourpuss. Haven't you ever heard of the Mafia?
No. Have you?
Certainly.
When?
Last week.
Oh, last week.
Yeah.
Well, how about that? Acting as though you'd known about it all your life. Well, my goodness.
That's enough, Glamourpuss. So that's why you haven't gone to the police, eh, Mr. Dawson? You're afraid of what will happen to you if you do.
Telephone call for Scrappy Lambert.
Well, not what will happen to me. I think I could take it. But I have a wife and 2 kids. And I'd do anything to protect them.
Even if it's refusing to do your duty as a citizen?
My first duty is to my family, Mr. Morgan.
Yeah, same old story. Same old runaround, it always works.
Well, what do you expect Chuck to do, Mr. Dawson? And if he does it, won't you be endangering your family as much as though you told the police?
Well, I hope that... Well, it's...
That I wouldn't let it be known you told me, huh? That somehow I'd have Jack Stone arrested and charged with Hatfield's murder without bringing your name into it. Just how do you expect me to do that? You're the only witness to the crime. The police haven't got enough evidence to arrest Stone on suspicion, let alone to convict him. No, I'm afraid without you to testify, Frank, it's a dead issue.
I can't, and I won't. They'll take my little girl. They told me they would.
Who told you?
The man who gave me the card. I didn't know that they'd even seen me. When I heard the shots and saw what was happening, I ducked into a doorway. Then the man who had done the shooting came running out of an alley and jumped into the car that Jack Stone was driving. They roared away, and then the other people in the cars appeared, and all I could think of was to get out of there and go home. And so I started, running most of the way. I was almost there when a car came up behind me and...
Hey, you! Hold it!
Were you calling me?
Yeah, I was calling you. What's your name?
Well, I don't know why I have to answer that.
Don't. What's your name?
It's Frank Dawson.
Where do you live? Come on, talk.
Two houses down the street, but don't hit me again.
And talk pretty. Where'd you come from just now?
From work. I'm a clothing store clerk. The store stays open Friday nights.
Yeah? Where's this store located?
It's on the corner of Melrose and Catherine.
Melrose and Catherine, eh? Then you must have walked there and Catherine to get here, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
You're the guy, all right. What'd you see in that alley?
I didn't see anything.
You... What'd you see?
Nothing. I didn't see a thing. You...
What'd you see?
Nothing. I didn't see... You...
What'd you see?
Don't. Don't hit me again.
And talk.
I saw the shooting.
That's better. You got any kids, Dawson?
Yes. Two.
No kidding. Kind of make you feel bad if anything happened to them, wouldn't it?
Oh, no. No, you can't. You mustn't. My kids didn't do anything. You can do what you want to me, but don't touch my kids.
I thought so. You and your old lady would be kind of put out if one of those kids should disappear and you never saw them again, wouldn't you?
Why, you dirty...
Not so fast! Just take it easy, I'll break you in two. You want some more?
My kids!
Nothing will happen to your kids if you're smart. Now, let's have a little rehearsal. What'd you see tonight?
I saw the shooting.
You saw what?
Nothing. I didn't see anything.
That's better. Just remember, you didn't see nothing. Not a thing. You didn't even come home that way. You walked down another street. Get it?
All right. I walked down another street.
And don't forget it. You walked down another street and you didn't see nothing. Remember it and nothing will happen to your kids. Forget it and one of them will be dead. You get that straight?
Yes, I understand.
Good. And just so you won't have a lapse of memory, here's something to keep it... Jump!
What did this character look like, Fred?
He was a big man with sandy hair and a kind of a flat nose. Well, he must have weighed well over 200.
Yeah, that'd be Doc Zerbe, Jack Stone's first lieutenant. Was Stone in the car?
No. Zerbe must have dropped Stone and then cruised around until he saw a lone man hurrying home. In another 2 minutes, I would have been safe.
Oh, how about the card with the black hand on it? When did he give you that?
I found it in my jacket pocket after I got home. I don't know how long I lay there on the sidewalk. And when I came to, the man and the car were gone. Somehow, I reached the house and I got inside without Sue and the kids seeing me. I went up to the bathroom. I wanted to clean up as best I could. And I found the card when I took off my jacket.
Did you tell your wife what had happened?
No, I was afraid she might call the police.
But how did you explain the bruises on your face?
Oh, I told her I got into a fight at the store.
And she believed you?
No, but... Sue's pretty understanding. She knows something is wrong. She's just waiting for me to tell her.
Telephone call for Mr. Frank Dawson, Hillside number.
That telephone call's for you, Mr. Dawson.
For me? Why, nobody knows I'm here.
Somebody does. You better answer.
Oh, yes, I better. Excuse me a moment, please.
So Dawson went off to answer the telephone. And I had an uneasy feeling that the message he was about to receive wasn't going to be good. He thought that no one knew he was here. So what did that mean? It meant that he'd been watched ever since the night of the murder, just in case he was foolish enough to think he could get away with telling a story to the police or someone else. So Carol and I waited, and both of us were thinking the same thing. We knew the minute Frank Dawson returned to the table, the worst had happened. Dawson was wild-eyed, and his mouth was trembling.
They've taken little Sue. They've kidnapped her. They told me that unless you promised to forget everything I told you, that I'd never see her again.
Sit down, Dawson. You're attracting attention.
But they've taken Sue. Don't you understand what that means? I was a
Sit
fool.
Sit down. Get hold of yourself. We'll get your youngster
back. You won't go to the police, though, will you, Mr. Morgan? They'll kill her if you do. No, they promise me you won't.
Not while they have Sue, I won't.
Oh, Chuck, this is terrible. What if you don't tell the police? That isn't going to get Mr. Dawson's little girl back. And when Mrs. Dawson finds out that Sue is missing, she isn't going to keep quiet.
I know. You're right, Clampus. Whatever we do, we'll have to work fast. Frank, do you think you can keep your wife from reporting Sue's disappearance for 24 hours?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to make up some story about taking Sue to see her grandmother or something. I don't know.
You'd better think up a story and sell it to your wife if you ever want to see your youngster again.
But, Chuck, 24 hours is so short a time. You can't possibly do anything.
Maybe no, maybe yes. Every man has a weakness, no matter how tough or cold-blooded he is. If my memory serves me right, Jack Stone's weakness is a nightclub singer named Bubbles Deering.
Do you mean that redhead at the Silver Slipper?
Yeah, that's the one. She's Jack's girl, and he's nuts about her. Wonder how he'd feel if she were kidnapped.
Oh, Chuck, for heaven's sakes. You're not thinking of kidnapping a full-grown woman.
No, not kidnapping. I have something else in mind. Glamorpus, by the way, you wouldn't mind if I made a couple of passes of Bubbles, would you?
Made a couple of... You wouldn't dare. Chuck Morgan, if you ever dream
of making... All right, Glamorpus, okay, take it easy. This is strictly business.
Strictly business. You're just using it as an excuse. That dizzy redhead. If she ever got her claws on you, she'd...
Shut up.
What?
I said shut up. A child's life is being threatened and you're carrying on like a schoolgirl. Are you going to be sensible, or I'm going to have to knock you over the head with this water pitcher?
All right, I'm sorry. But, Chuck...
Yeah?
You won't... You won't... You wouldn't...
Only if it's absolutely necessary will I ask Bubbles for her autograph, Glamorpus.
The conclusion of Stand By for Crime.
I haven't any illusions about my personal charm, but as a news reporter, it's my business to know all I can about what goes on in the underworld. The story about Jack Stone and his girl, Bubbles Deering, was common gossip. He'd imported her from New York about a year ago. And she hadn't been working at the Silver Slipper a month before he let it become known that Bubbles was his private property. A couple of guys had argued the point, but now they're in no position to argue or do anything else. So Jack Stone's chain of armor developed a weak link, huh? Well, if it was weak as I hoped, I might be able to cash in on it. So I sent Carol back to KOP with instructions to have a sub do my 11 o'clock broadcast if I didn't show up. And then drove out to the strip where the Silver Slipper was located. I caught the tail end of the first floor show, which featured Bubbles doing her song and dance routine. And sitting alone on the edge of the dance floor, I did my best to let her know her act was being appreciated. I had the feeling she was aware of my presence. Afterward, I went backstage and found a door with a star on it.
Yeah, who is it?
Hello, Bubbles.
What? Hey, what are you doing here?
Oh, I just thought I'd drop around and tell you how much I enjoyed your act.
Yeah. Well, now you told me, get out.
Wait a minute. I've got a proposition to make.
I ain't interested in no proposition. Hey, does Jack know you're here?
Jack? Who?
Jack Stone, the guy who owns this place. Ain't you never heard of him?
Well, now that you mention his name, I guess I have.
Huh. You better had. The last guy who came prancing in here is dead.
Sure, it's like that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. Now, if you're smart, you'll beat it.
Well, I appreciate the warning, but first I've got to state my proposition. How about coming to work up in San Francisco for me at twice your present salary?
Huh? Say, who are you?
My name's Jones. Bill Jones. I own the High Tide Club in San Francisco.
Never heard of it.
Ever been to San Francisco?
No.
Yeah, that explains it.
Okay, so all right, I ain't been around. And I ain't interested in getting around.
What's the matter, Bubbles? Scared?
Scared me? Huh? What?
Jack Stone.
Jack Stone? It's a laugh. Hey, listen, Buster, I got news for you. I'm Jack Stone's girl. He's in love with me, see?
Are you in love with him, Bubbles? Or do you just hang around here because you're scared of what will happen if you leave?
I ain't scared of nothing. I tell you nothing.
How do you like being someone's personal property, Bubbles? Not being able to even talk to another man. Only going out when Jack Stone says so. And then only to the places he chooses. You can't call your soul your own, can you, Bubbles?
Ah, you're crazy. You're talking yourself right into a dose of lead poisoning.
Pretty dull routine for a girl as young and pretty as yourself. What you need is freedom to move around without the knowledge that you're being spied on, without being afraid all the time.
Yeah? You think I'll get that freedom in San Francisco? Jack's got connections up there, too.
Not as good as mine. Stone may be a big shot down here, but up there he's small fry.
You mean I wouldn't have to go around looking over my shoulder all the time? You mean I'd have protection?
Plenty. You'd be as free as a breezes.
Huh? I don't know. The guy's got me pegged. He'd follow me no matter where I went. He'd kill me. He said so. No, I ain't taking the risk.
Well, you better think it over, Bubbles. It's probably the only chance you'll have to get out of this trap.
Trap? Huh. Yeah, that's it. I'm trapped in this stinking club till Jack Stone gets tired of me and throws me aside. I can't go no place. I can't talk to nobody but Jack Stone and a couple of old biddies who wait on me. I hate it.
Of course you do, Bubbles. Any normal girl would. Now, up in San Francisco, you'd be...
Yeah, how am I going to get up there? How am I going to get out of here? Look, he's got guys watching me all the time.
Yeah? Well, then they're pretty lax. No one saw me coming in here. Now, look. There's a plane for the north leaving Burbank in an hour. That'll give you time to go home and pack and get over to Lockheed. I'll meet you in the St. Francis Hotel tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and... Well, suppose one of Jack's boys asked me where I'm going.
Jack's out of town in San Diego. I checked that before coming in here. If anyone asked you questions, tell him you had a phone call from him. He wants you to join him in San Diego.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, you know what might work at that?
Sure.
Well, it just might. Hey, Jonesy, you made yourself a deal. Well, see you at the St. Francis tomorrow.
Well, maybe this would work and maybe it wouldn't. Anyway, it was the best I could think of at the moment. I went outside, crossed Sunset, and got into my jalopy, which was parked on the other side. After a while, Bubbles came out of the alley that led to the stage door of the Silver Slipper and got into a cab. The cab started west. A sedan pulled away from the curb and followed. I made a U-turn and followed the sedan. Both cab and sedan turned left on Doheny, then made a right turn. The cab stopped in front of an apartment house, and Bubbles went inside. The sedan parked about a half a block up the street. I parked about 50 yards this side. A light came on in the upstairs apartment window. I caught a glimpse of Bubbles as she came over to draw the shade. 15 minutes later, the light went out. I got out and strolled up toward the sedan, reaching it just as Bubbles came from the apartment house and headed for the cab. The guy in the sedan started to get out. Hello there. You got a match?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah?
These won't work. They're wet. They probably got that way from the clam who's been holding them.
Hey, what is this? Let go my arm.
Sure, Mac. There you are. And here's something else. So far, so good. Bubbles was on her way up north, and no one knew where she was going but me. I went back to KOP and found Frank Dawson in the waiting room of my office with Carol.
Any luck, Chuck?
Yeah? I'm doing all right, I think.
Did Bubbles fall for that winning smile of yours?
Oh, never mind that. Go find Pappy and tell him to put on a sub for my 11 o'clock show.
Well, where are you going to be at 11 o'clock?
At the Silver Slipper, picking up Sue. Now, get going. And remember, both of you, not a word to anyone, not even Pappy. It would ruin everything. So I went into my private office and called Lockheed Airport in Burbank and asked if Flight 183 had gotten off all right. They said it was just leaving the ground. So that was that. The gorgeous Bubbles was out of reach for at least an hour and three quarters. So then I began dialing the Silver Slipper.
Silver Slipper.
I want to talk to Doc Zerbe.
This is Zerbe. Who's calling?
Chuck Morgan, KOP newscaster.
Oh, yeah? What's on your mind, Morgan? Going to give us a little publicity for a change?
Yeah, that's exactly what I have in mind, Doc. I don't suppose you have a guest over there named Sue Dawson.
Never heard of her. Why? She's somebody important?
Yeah, she is. You know, we've a guest over here named Bubbles Deering. Thought you might like to know.
What the devil are you talking about?
Just what you think, Doc. Shall we make a deal?
You're nuts. Bubbles is on the floor right now doing her turns.
That's so. But suppose you take a look and see.
Well, hang on.
Sure. So Doc took a look. I could hear a door bang and loud voices at the other end of the wire. Then Doc was back on the phone again.
Morgan, you dirty rat. If you snatch that babe, you'll get a bullet through your head. You know that, don't you?
And if Bubbles isn't at the Silver Slipper when Stone gets back from Dago, you'll get a bullet through your head. You know that, don't you, Doc?
What's the deal?
Bring the kid to that office where you are right now. I'll be over and pick her up in 15 minutes.
What about Bubbles?
As soon as Sue's safe at home, I'll give you a ring and tell you where Bubbles is.
How do I know it won't be a double cross?
You don't. But the way I look at it, you haven't got much choice in the matter, have you, Doc?
Okay. Be here in 15 minutes. We'll have the kid.
I knew what Doc was thinking. He was thinking he'd snatch one of Dawson's kids any time, but he couldn't get Bubbles back any time, and he wasn't hankering for a hole in the head. So I told Carol and Frank Dawson to sit tight, and I drove out to the Silver Slipper again. The second show of the evening was over, and the handkerchief-sized dance floor was mobbed. I wandered around until I found a door that looked as though it might lead to an office. It did. Inside, Doc Zerby and a couple of his strong-arm boys were sprawled out in chairs. There wasn't any youngster in evidence, and I didn't like the sneering expression on Doc Zerby's face. I started to say something, and just then, a door across the room opened, and Bubbles Deering walked in. Well, there wasn't much time to figure out a plan of action. One thing I was doggone sure of, Bubbles wasn't on that plane to San Francisco, and that meant I was a dead duck. Doc Zerby started to speak, and one of his boys reached toward his gun. I put my hand behind me, jerked open the door, and jumped backwards, banging it shut. But instead of trying to lose myself in the crowded room, I flattened against the wall behind the door. The door banged open, and Zerby, his two boys, and Bubbles came pouring out. I jumped inside the office again, slammed the door, and locked it. Then I sprinted for the door through which Bubbles had entered, found myself in another room, and also found myself staring down at the tear-stained face of Susie Dawson. There was a window that opened onto an alley. I threw a chair into it, picked up Susie, and dropped into the alley. Just as the rear door of the club opened and Zerby and his boys came out. They started for me and I started for Sunset Boulevard holding Susie. A couple of bullets passed too close for comfort, then someone was yelling.
Chuck, this way.
It was Glamopus. She was getting out of a squad car that had just pulled up to the curb. Bill Meggs and a bunch of cops and Frank Dawson were all on the sidewalk. I was within 10 feet of them when... Of course, I had to stumble. I went down and cracked my head on the pavement trying to keep Susie from getting hurt. That was the last I knew for quite a while. When I came to, I was in the back seat of the squad car, my head on Carol's lap. A cop was driving.
What the...
Hi, Chucky boy.
I thought I told you to stay back at the office.
Aren't you glad I didn't?
No. I mean, yes. How'd you know where I was?
Well, you told me, remember? Besides that, I listened in on the extension phone to your conversation with Doc Zerby.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And that's how I knew Susie would be at the Silver Slipper, and it would be all right to tell the police.
I wonder why I didn't think of that.
Because you're honest, Chucky boy. You made a deal with Doc, and you intended to keep it. You're honest and good and fine.
Shut up. Where's Susie?
She went home with her father.
Where's Doc and his boys?
In jail.
Where's Bill Meggs?
He went to the airport to meet Jack Stone.
Where's Bubbles?
Oh, she's gone somewhere to make reservations on a plane for San Francisco tomorrow. She said every seat was taken on flight 183. And she says she has to be at the St. Francis Hotel tomorrow to meet a man named Jones.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said.
That reminds me.
What?
I have to be in San Francisco tomorrow myself. A very important date at the St. Francis Hotel.
That's Case Closed for this week. You can find more from Marlowe, Stand By for Crime, past episodes of Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at the website relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, your donations make it all possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with a story from Mr. and Mrs. North, and one from yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on another episode of Case Closed.